love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
¿Cómo están, bitches?
And Alex.
The Ring. Sweet tea is 350 pounds plus.
Wow. We're on work. Your commercial breaks. Look at Hartman. How bizarre is this guy?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to a brand new episode of Comic Conversations. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Hey.
I knew you'd love that.
He's back. I got to watch SmackDown tonight.
Yes, for those of you who aren't pro wrestling fans, the pro wrestler Luke Harper has returned on the SmackDown brand of WWE. And as you heard in the clip, he does just this scream in the middle of his matches when he's on offense. He just goes,
I believe he's saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. The more important thing is James Ellsworth beat AJ Styles. And he's getting a title match next week.
State of the business. They're going to put the strap on him, brother. I can just tell.
Oh, God, dude. They're going to go from a 1.5 to a 8.7.
He'll be able to afford to buy a neck.
That's mean. Not his fault.
All right, let's go into news. Alex, did you want to give us our update on Wildstorm?
Oh yeah, we had talked about, you know, is Ellis running it or not, and is it in continuity? It is in its separate universe, and Ellis apparently is running it, so it will not be a part of the DCU, which is good, because it means he can pretty much do whatever he wants, which is sort of what they need, because that, to bring that line back, they need to do something different.
Yep. Speaking of the DCU, the artist John Boy Myers leaves Teen Titans after 2 issues.
Yeah, he made it a rebirth issue and then did the first issue, and they announced this last week, I think, right after we would have done the show last week, and he said it was because of creative differences, and all you think is like, you were on the book for 2 issues.
I'm more concerned with, you have this artist on the book, this new series is coming out, and you only have 2 issues ready to go?
Well, they had the first issue and the second issue.
I always thought just the way it worked with comic books especially would be, they'd have maybe 5 issues in the can as the book's about to come out. That way, if something happens, or they usually switch artists, especially in the Marvel books, that's usually what happens.
No, dude, they've fucking switched artists mid-issue before it happens.
Yes, he cited creative issues, and then he proceeded to leave the company.
Yeah, he must have had some big creative issues. Now, I liked the artist. I thought, I did make complaints that, like, I thought the characters looked too young. Mm-hmm. So,
well,
I'll be interested
was appropriate,
to see.
But yeah, the rest of the characters were kind of odd.
Yeah, they just, Beast Boy especially.
Alex, are you still there?
Yeah, my headphones are having connection issues.
Ah, okay. Just clarifying. Alright. As long as we're talking new books, Jeff Lemire and Scott Snyder are teaming up with a new Image book called AD After Death. It's a 3-part, 80-page per chapter series with Lemire on art.
Yeah, I've seen Lemire's art. He's done some of the Black Hammer covers. He's not bad. They said it was going to be a comic with prose sections. So I told Fat Man I compared it to Cerebrus, which is the only thing I can think of that did that. Possibly less pretentious. I don't know. I mean, I'll read it. I don't think we'll cover it for the show because it's 80 pages an issue.
But this might be a fun series. And Scott Snyder, you know, since he's left Batman, I'm sure he has all a bunch of projects that he wants to do. And if he has Lemire on art, you have to imagine this is going to be a pretty good book.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to Marvel with their new title. They decided to give America Chavez a book again. Now, obviously, this is coming off the heels of New York Comic Con, so they made this announcement to retailers only, which, again, I find odd, but not only did they just do that, but then they also, they've announced an artist, but they have no writer attached.
Yeah, that's weird. I see no evidence that this character is over enough to justify a title, but you gotta try new stuff with new characters. So, see how it does. I'll try to read it. I mean, I don't dislike her character. She's in the Ultimates, but she's against villain Captain Marvel, so, you know, points on that. But it's just they haven't had a chance to do a lot with her. I mean, I could go with the cynical, they're checking boxes thing.
That's what I'm thinking, because I see stuff like this, and I see them doing stuff with Robbie Reyes in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, so I'm just like, oh, okay, so they're just looking to check off boxes.
Well, she's a bisexual, what is she, Puerto Rican?
Yes.
And that is not something that is currently represented, although it's very specific.
I just, like, it comes off as trying too hard. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. I thought the same thing when they announced Kamala Khan as the new Miss Marvel, so I may be proven wrong, but I'm...
Yeah, well, they announced this, and it's coming on the heels of their next, I don't think we're calling it relaunches anymore, their next initiative, so, with new characters, so that's, I don't think Marvel has any goddamn clue what it was doing. I mean, we'll talk about it. We read Champions this week, and it's talking about how it's the fallout of Civil War II. Mm. And it's like, Civil War II is still going on.
Yeah. Well, we had the same thing happen last year with Secret Wars.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, that book still made sense, but...
Okay, moving on to our next story. Kurt Busiek's coming back for an issue of Thunderbolts.
Yeah, they're doing like a special.
Yes,
and Busiek created he didn't create the characters, but he created the Thunderbolts during a sort of a bad period for Marvel, actually. his run wasn't my favorite, but it was the initial bit of it before you found out, like when you found out what was going on, and then when they did the resolution, it was very good. We're obviously fans because Astro City, and I'd like to see him write a Marvel book, but it's, you know, it's not a regular title. It's just a special thing.
Yeah, it's supposed to be for the February 8th edition of Thunderbolts, issue 10. I read the interview on Newsarama, and they kept teasing they're bringing somebody back from the original iteration. They kept teasing that it may be Citizen V, but I've also seen photos of people like the old Beetle on there, so... It's hard to say one way or another who's going to be the character, but that's a series we currently read, so I'm excited to see where they decide to go with that.
Yeah.
All right, and sort of wrapping things up with this week's news, the editor of the last Steve Gerber Howard the Duck series is being put on a Deadpool the Duck series.
Yeah, it sounds like they are desperately trying to get something this character does to sell. Mm-hmm. And they took the very talented writer who was on the book and gave him a Star-Lord book. So they're trying to mix it with Deadpool because everything Deadpool sells. Mm-hmm. But it's not really Deadpool.
Well, to be fair, it is a 5-issue miniseries, so it's not like they're hoping the series... knocks it out of the park. It's a 5-issue mini. If it just sells okay, it's done its job. I do find it odd that of all characters they chose to highlight here is Howard the Duck, but...
Well, they've already done Deadpool something with everyone else. So...
Okay. So, that's gonna do it for this week's news. With that out of the way, let's go into this week's books.
Hey
I was telling Alex off air, were you aware of around, like, I guess a couple years ago, this idea of setting the Guile theme to anything was a thing?
And I was unaware, but I fully believe it.
Like, there'd be a scene out of Rocky IV, and he's fighting Drago, and they have the Guile theme, and then they set it to something from The Lion King, and it seems to fit with everything, so.
I used to listen to Guile and Ken's theme before I'd go work out.
Nice.
Got me hyped up. And then I'd go to the gym and do a dragon punch. And people would look at me weird because I'd try to back up to get ready to do a sonic boom. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, why does that guy keep walking backwards? Like, what's he doing?
He's doing it wrong.
He doesn't quite have it.
No. All right, let's go into this week's books, which include Shipwreck 1, Aquaman 8, Batman 8, Nightwing 6, Justice League 6, Midnighter and Apollo 1, Superman 8, Art Ops 12, Clean Room 12, Shade the Changing Girl 1, Ragnarok 10, Eclipse 2, Moon Knight 1, Walking Dead 159, All New Wolverine 13, Amazing Spider-Man 19, Champions 1, Death of X 1, Doctor Strange 12, Jessica Jones 1, Scarlet Witch 11, Squadron Supreme 12, and to round out this week's books, Bloodshot Reborn 18.
I was pleasantly surprised by some stuff in this week's books.
All right.
I will say that is a tease.
Would one of those books have included the Aftershock book Shipwreck issue 1, writer Warren Ellis, art by Phil Hester?
No, I expected to like that.
Okay.
That one didn't surprise me. Interesting book, though. Weird way to start it. This is one of the many in a long line of Warren Ellis books where you don't know what the fuck is going on. I mean, they gave you basics. The basics of this are, it's called Shipwreck, but it's you know, not a like a water going vessel. It was a guy was hired by the government to work on this. I believe it was like a spaceship.
Was that?
He specifically said it was a ship that crashed after leaving an alien planet.
Oh, okay,
so,
I took it to literal and actual. I just assumed it was a ocean boat.
No. He specifically said it was a spaceship. But wherever he is, it is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. Like he. It opens up and he's in this diner, this rundown diner, and like in a shitty looking town, and there's nobody in the town. And he goes in the diner and there's a guy sitting there. He's not a cop. We don't know what he is. He apparently works for the government. And he's like, hey, so you gotta tell me everything about what happened. And you know, he's trying to figure out where the hell he is and what's going on, but he's just like, no, you gotta tell me what happened. Basically, there was this big project. It was called something Janus. And there was a guy who he's calling Ishmael, which cute, by the way. He sabotaged the plan. But after this was all done, since he wasn't a government employee, he was contracted, the government just told him, okay, never mention this again, and you have to go disappear now. Well, so the world thinks he's dead. But the bigger problem is we don't know where he is.
Exactly.
And he's in this diner and he ends up going into the kitchen and there's some crazy bitch in the kitchen cooking a person.
Cooking her then boyfriend. She said, I guess she made the analogy is like spiders choose their mates based on nutrition. And you can tell she's completely, you know, off her rocker and she goes after our main character trying to kill him.
But I don't, and then he sort of accidentally kills her in trying to save himself. I don't know if any of this is real though, is the thing, cause there's something incredibly off about all this. It doesn't seem like he's just in some random town.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's the first issue. Sometimes when you read a book and you don't really understand what's going on, you're left with, well, I don't want to read this.
Exactly. That's sort of where I was coming from. But then, you know, they gave Warren Ellis in this book gave you just enough to where you want to come back for the next issue. So he almost did it to where I was like, well, I'm not reading this again. But
what's
what's the
Declan Shelby book that's on hiatus right now with Hedlund?
Oh, that is the Injection. There we go.
Injection, yeah. Injection, we almost dropped. And I kept saying, no, we gotta stay with it, we gotta stay with it. And after about three issues, it became amazing.
Yes.
And it started to make sense. So, Ellis has a lot of, he's earned a lot of goodwill with me. So, I'm stick with this. But, you know, that's not to say this is terrible. It was just, you don't really know what's going on when you're reading this, except for a basic plot of, he worked on this thing, somebody sabotaged this thing, he's trying to find that guy.
Yeah, he should be dead.
Should be.
Yeah, when they talked about the shipwreck, they said, we don't know how you're alive. We're cool with it, but at the same time, it's like, we're just, if you can keep your mouth shut, that'd be great.
Well, he might be dead.
That's what I'm thinking too. That's the only thing I could think it could be, but it could be something else.
Because there's got to be something going on here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like I said, I thought that, like I said earlier, they gave you enough to want you to read the next issue. Normally, especially with other people, I would have been quick to just move on. But this is still Ellis, and like you, he also built up a lot of goodwill. So I'm willing to stick it out and see where it's going.
Yep.
Okay, moving on to DC with Aquaman issue 8, writer Dan Abnett, art by Scott Eaton.
I have no memory of what happened in this book.
It's okay. It's funny because the thing is, I pace myself out the duration of the week, so there are books that I forget stuff that happens, but this I kind of remember what they, at the beginning of this book, they show Mira and she's going to start her trials so she can be worthy to marry Arthur.
Oh yeah, there's like creepy religious Atlantis women.
They're all like Atlantean widows.
But they have some sort of power in the Atlantean world.
Yes. So they set that up while at the same time they were doing the storyline where Arthur was having to fight this monster that for whatever reason why it couldn't be stopped until I think halfway in the issue was revealed it was the Shaggy Man, and they revealed that it took the Justice League all their members just to even slow the guy down. So the idea you're having Aquaman his assorted armies to stop this guy, it's like you wonder how it's going to end.
That's not like as someone who hasn't read a lot of DC, the Shaggy Man is an old character with a ridiculous name, but the Shaggy Man's gimmick is pretty much you can't die, you can't really hurt him. Anything you do to him, he'll get better. So he's, as ridiculous as he is, he's always been kind of given the proper writer, he's always been kind of a threat.
Yeah,
so
they assume he's going after Atlantis, because that's where it seems like he's going. But Aquaman studied his trajectory and he's like, you know what? He's gonna walk through Atlantis, but that's not really his final destination. His final destination is, Shore City? Where's Aquaman from? I feel
Atlantis?
Like, no, I, his,
oh, you
his
mean
surfacing.
The land place?
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of it.
But he's looking to go to his landward home, so.
And he's possibly being directed there by, Black Manta, by Nero.
Yeah. Still funny.
Nemo.
Yeah, I want it to be Nero though.
Brother Nero, do you have your Shaggy Man?
Oh, that's great. All right, moving on to our next book, Batman issue 8, writer Tom King, art by Riley Rossmall.
I'm just gonna say right now, I didn't like this, and Tom King didn't write it.
Yeah,
I thought Nightwing was like 10 times better, and I didn't particularly like Nightwing.
It's the same story, dude.
Yeah, but Nightwing had the better part of the story.
Oh, okay.
I found this a chore to get through, and it wasn't, I got about halfway through this, and then I flipped to the front of the book, and I'm like, Tom King didn't write this. Well, he didn't. Tom King did not write this. So, it at least cleared that up for me. He's apparently doing his story after.
Ah, okay, that makes more sense now.
I just think it's getting a bit long in the tooth. We can combine this with the Nightwing review just because.
Yeah, it's gonna go seamless into it. But the author on this would be Steve Orlando.
Yeah, and it's, I don't want to bury the guy. It's, you know, not like horrible. It's not absolutely terrible.
To me, it's a story that didn't need to be this long. It's a story that didn't have that many legs, and the idea you're going to stretch it out for this many issues.
Well, it ends next week.
I know, but still, it's a 6-part storyline, and really, yeah. All things considered, there wasn't a whole lot to go with.
Yeah, and another issue is, like, I'll be honest, I don't give two shits about Spoiler, Orphan. I don't even know who Orphan is.
I was about to ask you, as someone who knows more about the DC lore, I knew nothing of Orphan.
She kinda looks like the Batgirl. The Batgirl before they made it so Barbara could walk.
Oh, the other character you were talking about, Spoiler?
No, Spoiler is Robin. Yeah, Blue Master's kid.
Got it.
So she's a villain's kid who used to pal around with Robin. Mm-hmm. But Robin's not dead, but they think he's dead now. So, yeah, but I mean, this was, you know, the same thing. It's like, oh, there's a big monster. Oh, you guys can't go after the monster alone. Oh, we're going to go after the monster alone. They found a cure for the monsters because Nightwing and Batwoman maybe had been turned into monsters.
Was that it? I thought it was just Gotham Girl and Nightwing.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yes.
Okay. But they, Bruce's other sidekick, whose name I can never remember. The one who's gonna be.
Duke.
Getting on Gotham.
Yeah, Duke.
Is that his superhero name?
I don't think he has a superhero name just yet.
He has a costume.
Yes. Oh, well. It's that black and yellow costume.
Yeah, but he came up with the cure and he went out to, you know, give the cure, I guess. He fixed Nightwing and he fixed Gotham Girl. And, Batman found out where Hugo Strange was because he's behind all this. Mm-hmm. And we cut to Hugo Strange. He's all jacked up because he's on Venom and he's putting on a Batman suit. Well, what Batman figured out was, and this was actually kind of clever, all the people he used to make monsters, they had similar backgrounds to Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So he was profiling Batman, and by picking these people, it was meant to send a message to Batman. Then he turned them into monsters. Whatever. And Batman's gonna go find Hugo Strange, who is apparently a threat because he is big and strong as Bane. The problem with this is, Hugo Strange doesn't know how to fight.
Nope.
Bane did. And Batman has beaten Bane. So, I know this story is apparently going to follow this with Batman then goes after Bane, which is a better story, and Tom King is writing that. So, this whole thing was to set up for a better story.
Well, I talked about this when they first started doing it, and I'm like, this isn't Tom King's story, so I'm kind of skeptical on the quality. And I was sort of proven wrong last week because I found the stuff with Gotham Girl destroying all those monsters. I was like, you know what? This is sort of off the beaten trail as far as Batman stories are concerned, but this is at least interesting enough to where I'm like, okay, I was sort of dragged to the story kicking and screaming, but now that I'm here, it's actually not too bad.
No, I want to see where it's going, but I'm not interested in the actual action of the story.
No, you're right. And to me, that the problem with that is it's like, well, then it should have gone six parts then. You could have easily told a very similar story with probably 3 to 4 issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that also cover Nightwing? Because I feel like we're...
Because then Nightwing was what led to him going off and fighting Hugo Strange.
Okay. Moving on to our next book, Justice League, Issue 6, writer Brian Hitch, art by Matthew Clark.
This is another one where I read it, and I'm like, did I miss an issue? But then I realized what they were doing was they were opening up near the end of a battle they were having. Mm-hmm. Instead of giving us the beginning of it, they gave us the end, and that's because this was a character-focused issue, but the reason it was a character-focused issue is because someone is fucking with the Justice League's minds.
Exactly.
And they're not acting. Now, we didn't get to see who that was, but it was made very apparent in this. Like, they beat the team, and Batman told Superman he's got to talk to him, and Superman blew him off and went home. And he was being, like, a creepy, paranoid dick. And then Flash asked the female Green Lantern out on a date, but she's freaking out about everything to do with this date, and Flash can't stop moving. Like, they go out to dinner, you know, and he orders the left side of the menu pretty much. But then he goes to, like, touch her hand, and she freaks the fuck out and, like, is shooting shit at him, and then he runs off with her, and it's just all the Justice League members are acting insane. Just totally balls crazy. But they did all pair off. Like, Aquaman asked Wonder Woman to come with him so she could help him with something. And so Batman and Superman are acting weird, and Aquaman and Wonder Woman got something going on. And so who was it, like, Cyborg and the male Green Lantern?
Yeah, they paired
went
up
to do something. Yeah, but he looked like he was all pissed off that the female Green Lantern went with Flash. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the thing to note there is that they haven't shown that those two aren't dating or anything.
Are they? I don't think they are.
I said they're not.
Oh, okay.
That's what you noticed, because he looked like he was, like, jealous or something, but they've never shown anything like that in his character.
Well, I also think, isn't that the Green Lantern that's gay?
He's gay?
Oh, no, I'm thinking of the original one. Never mind.
Oh, yeah, that's what I got.
Okay, I got the two confused. I don't know why. I remember there was that story way back when, before I was into comics, and I was like, I'm pretty sure it was that one, but no, you're right. It was the other one.
He's a different kind of green. Alan Scott's a different kind of green. Yeah, he doesn't have their rings.
I'm familiar that much with the characters that I know which one you're talking about. OG. Yeah, and then I don't know if you mentioned this, but the issue just ends with Superman threatening to kill Batman, because he's like, you know what? I've jumped through hoops to try to impress the guy. He still keeps me at arm's length. I'm not cool with it. If I have to kill the guy, then that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it escalated very quickly. And there are no hints as to what caused this.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay, speaking of Batman and Superman and homosexuality, Midnighter and Apollo, Issue 1, writer Steve Orlando, artist Fernando Blanco.
This is only 6 issues.
That's a little disappointing to hear.
They did something I liked a lot in this, because, you know, I'm an old Wildstorm mark. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I haven't gotten around to reading past the first issue of Midnighter's run. I don't know how much of the Wildstorm stuff moved over, but Henry Bendix is the bad guy in this. And he, in the old Wildstorm, he was the one who formed the Stormwatch team. He was in charge of the Stormwatch team. Mm-hmm. And then he eventually made a heel turn. So he's the bad guy from right off in this, and has positioned himself against Midnighter. But the main thing was, it was the relationship between Midnighter and Apollo. And I want to say this was dealt with in Midnighter's book, but apparently they haven't been together for a period of time.
Okay.
Because they're gay Batman and gay Superman. But they haven't been together for some time, and they kind of got back together in this book, and they had people over to Midnighter's apartment, and they all made fun of him for being a killing machine. They really want you to know that Midnighter kills a lot of people.
Well, they want to differentiate between him and Batman, considering they're both in the same universe. You don't.
Well, and
have,
also
like,
him and Apollo in this book.
Yes.
Because you know, Midnighter's thinking is, you know, I was built to kill. I was built to be the most efficient killing machine, so I kill people. But Apollo is not really cool with all the killing, but he loves Midnighter. So he's trying to talk to him like, hey, maybe you shouldn't murder so many people. I want to put over the action scene in this book because I thought it was fucking fantastic. Like the first five pages, they show they're fighting these weirdos on a train. And there's like two pages of Midnighter having to move through the train to fight guys, and there was a full page where it showed the movement, and he busts through the top, and he's running through, and he grabs the little handhold thing you hold on to, holds on to it, kicks a guy, and then rips it out, and then throws it through another guy. This all happens as you move down the page. It was so fucking cool. And then, you know, Apollo got to do something cool too, but that was like a full page. I'm going to pick up this fucking train thing because I'm Superman. But yeah, then it went through and, you know, Midnighter said he was going to go get Bendix. That's his goal. But Bendix wanted him to get to him. So he ends up getting to him. And then he says like, okay, well, you're trapped here now. He's like, and I don't want to go. Well, first of all, he mocked Midnighter quite heavily. Yeah, he's not scared of him. And he's like, hey, well, I don't really need to go after you. I just go after people you care about. And he apparently teleported Apollo to hell is what they showed. He appeared to be in hell, which is an interesting way to go about this with Midnighter's very sci-fi character that they've now mixed in hell. So, however, the idea that Midnighter is going to save his boyfriend in hell and he's going to be brutally murdering demons, that sounds fun.
It is certainly different than, I have to imagine, the usual Midnighter and Apollo stories.
Well, they've never, you know, the thing with that is they've never really done a Midnight. Like, it's known that they are in a relationship, and in, you know, the team books they were in, they did fight together. But they've never really explored, like, them as a couple. And they've never had Apollo be put in a position where he would have to be saved, because it's kind of hard to make Superman vulnerable.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, you know, they apparently did that here. They put him in hell. But you would think it would be difficult for Midnighter to get to hell. Well, he could just die and then he'd go to hell because he's a horrible person, but, you know, he's murdered thousands of people. So, I mean, you know, he'd probably go to hell, but, you know, getting there without dying
and then
somehow beating
Bendix.
Yeah. And the other thing is with Wildstorm coming back, he could kill the villain.
You read my mind. It's like, yeah, they could just kill them off because it's like, if they're going to restart Wildstorm, and they're only gonna make this a miniseries.
Why not kill him off and use him in Wildstorm?
Exactly, but at the same time, I understand why DC didn't want to initially show their hand, because then it'd sort of be a wash for the series.
Well, and I hate to say this, and I also think they might have an issue killing two gay characters.
I think you can get away with it. They have enough gay characters in their regular continuity. I think they can get away with it.
Yeah, but Midnighter's kind of over.
Well, he'd be over in a new continuity.
Yeah, I guess. And I would like Ellis to handle him again. We'll see. It would also be nice, you know, if Ellis created new characters.
Yeah.
But I suppose you're ruining the whole we're doing a new Wildstorm thing if you do nothing but new characters.
It would be nice if they could carry them over.
We'll see. This is a good first issue, though. Like I said, I really like the fights in it. I thought, who's the artist on this?
Let's see. I already closed it out. Let's see if I can very quickly try to find this again. Let's see. Midnight and Apollo, issue one. The artist is Fernando Blanco.
Well, he's quite good at drawing fights.
Very much so. That fight in the train scene was amazing. Right, moving on to our next title, Superman Issue 8, writer Peter J. Tomasi, art by Doug Menke.
What is this?
Superman?
Oh, one of the books we're not going to read anymore.
Yes. Here's the thing. This was a good book, and especially I really love this issue. But, like I've been saying earlier, with as many books as we read, we have to try to cut back. And God bless this book. It's fine. But at the same time, it's like we would like to try new stuff, so.
Yeah, let's cut in here and just talk about this real quick. With Wildstorm coming out now, with DC continually launching new books, and Marvel's going to be doing their round of new books, some of these books that we read and we just say, oh, it was a good issue, but we don't really have anything to say about, we're going to try to slide off those.
Exactly.
If we have nothing interesting to say about them other than it's good, you know, now, these books, I'm probably going to continue reading them. So, if something important happens, yes, we'll jump back on and we'll be able to pick up where we left off and tell you guys what's happening. But for the time being, just for our own sanity, so we don't have a week with like 35 books.
I don't think we've ever had 30. I think we've capped it at 28.
At the end of this month, we will have read over 90 comics.
Jeez, try not to remind me.
And that's excessive, in my opinion. And we can keep, it's much easier to keep cycling in this new stuff if we drop some old stuff. So stuff like Superman, Action Comics, that's getting dropped. I'm still going to read Batman. I'm not going to be regularly reading Detective Comics.
Here's the thing. In the world of fantastic comic books, just okay does not really cutting it.
Yeah, and it's good enough for, you know, for me to read, but it's not good enough for me to talk about.
Exactly.
So, this would be a book that fits into that. It was a good book. It was enjoyable.
And especially this issue I really liked, and I'm looking at the description of the write-up for this book, and it read like a one-off. Because it's like, okay, they went to Dinosaur Island, they found these World War II, I guess you would say, relics, as well as, I guess, some skeletons of people who died. But to me, this read like a one-off, so I can't imagine what they're gonna do for
it. No, it's continuing. It doesn't sound like it's gonna be a Superman story. The losers are an old DC group. They were basically like, the fuck was Nick, the Howling Commandos? Mm-hmm. It was DC's Howling Commandos, and, Ennis, of course, Ennis did a run with them. That was very good, but they are existing DC characters, but this is basically a story showing how they died because they ended up on the weird island where they died, which, you know, is going to be fine for a story and it's different, but you know, with Superman, I think we're going to be covered reading Trinity. I'm going to keep reading that. And like I said, we'll keep tabs on it because of Mr. Oz. It's a big deal.
It's funny
because
how long were we complaining about? It's like, oh, we want to read DC. We want to read DC, but it's just not good. We don't like the new 52. Finally, DC does Rebirth, gets us to read DC, but the idea of they're having so many books between this and Vertigo and
Young Animal,
Wildstorm and Young Animal.
And like I said, I'm still going to read it. It's just I can't continue to go in-depth discussions on 25 fucking books. It's a lot easier to talk about a newer book than it is a book that's on issue 8 with nothing particularly going on.
Yeah. But I thought this was a good story. I liked the ending part where the survivor loser was, he painted the, I guess a story of what happened, how they landed on the dinosaur island, how they lost a couple of their members because of the dinosaur, but they fought back and they were able to kill the dinosaur that ate most of their team.
Yeah.
So it was a cute story. All right. Speaking of Vertigo, Art Ops issue 12, writer Sean Simon, art by Michael Allred.
Well, it ended.
It's funny, this sort of caught me off guard, because I thought, oh, okay, whatever. I thought this was going to be an ongoing series.
Well, that's what I said to you, too. And, I mean, it had a satisfying ending, I'll say that right now. But, you know, we read this, and we were like, we were like, oh, it ended. And then you were like, yeah, and I think Clean Room's ending too. And I go, oh, it is? And I read Clean Room. It's definitely not ending. I even found the solicitation for issue 13.
Oh, no, Clean Room. Right. I see it through issue 14. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's definitely not ending. But that issue, for people who are wondering why we discuss this, it had the end written at the end of the page. It just meant the end of that part of the storyline. This one had a very defined ending because they resolved everything really, really quick. Like, Reggie, his dad, and his mom, because the Art Ops team is back, they ended up confronting the neighborhood dads or whatever the fuck their name was. And it turned out that the girl with velvet powers was the daughter of one of the dads.
Mm-hmm.
So that made him like, oh, honey, I love you. Everything will be better now. And he hugged her and he left his shit group. Reggie ended up finding, Mona Lisa and his child. And they ended up getting married and retiring and having a happy life. That was pretty much what it was. Now, they did leave an opening for future stuff to happen because apparently, his child can draw and likes bringing the drawings to life.
He doesn't like to, but it just happens because he wanted to show his father the drawing of a demon. And as he shows him the photo,
Thing is like in the back, and it was a cute, it was like a cute monster, but he did the drawing and it was like hanging out in the building.
He's all the demon was just there. I just drew it.
And they did explain how the Mona Lisa could continue to live outside the panel. What they did was they got a painting of Da Vinci and they pulled it out and told him he had to paint the Mona Lisa. So she sat and she posed for a portrait and they recreated the portrait so that she was able to continue to live outside the frame. So that was cute.
They couldn't just have a replica.
Yeah.
I would love it if Reggie just did two times Mona Lisa with the new Mona Lisa.
I was sad that we didn't get to see Bruno.
Yeah, unfortunately. You think he'd be happy because now there's two Mona Lisas.
Yeah, well, he should have made him make three Mona Lisas. Like, he's got the original, and then they can make another one, and then you know, to go in the painting, and then he does another one that could be with Bruno, who was created to love her.
Aww. It would be cute if they try to do something like that, but Bruno was still hard up for the original Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
Be cute. Oh, well. Alright, our other Vertigo title that we mentioned earlier, Clean Room, issue 12, writer Gail Simone, art by John Davis Hunt.
Okay, so
I was like, fill me in on this book. This is one of these instances where I read the book, I kind of knew what happened in this book, but at the same time, I kind of need you to clarify what happened here.
They showed, they'd said before that the reason Spark was good was because he was exorcised from a woman,
mm-hmm.
or from a young girl, and they showed the exorcism. The other thing that was going on was the guy who was trying to forcibly take over her company. Astrid. He was threatening to kill everyone on her board of directors unless they put him in charge.
Exactly.
So she ended up firing the board of directors,
mm-hmm.
so that she was the only one who had power, so he couldn't do anything. She then revealed to him that his sidekick there was one of the demons, and he ended up killing the guy because he found out what he was. So that guy was done. That was taken care of. She then moved on to, she had to try to find her brother who had a kid, and she went to the house. She found where he was. The brother wasn't there, but the kid was there, and the kid is one of the monsters.
Ah, okay.
So the kid is a demon. Now, Spark's story was, He he kind of turned good because Chloe was trying to talk to him. She's telling him, like, hey, you remember when I told you to be evil again? You should stop doing that. And you could tell he was kind of fighting it because he wasn't good with it.
He was quick to fight the first time because he didn't want to be bad again. But then when they made him bad, they were having to turn it off, and he was sort of hesitant. He's like, I don't know what to do. He's like, what? He said, one instance you want me to be good, and the other instance you want me to be bad. So
yeah, but Chloe, they were in the clean room, and Chloe revealed that she can, like, turn the clean room on, and Astrid's the only other one who could do that. And what the clean room does is it lets you re-experience past memories. So she forced him to relive the memory of him being exorcised, which apparently allowed him to then be good again. Even though he really didn't want her to do it. I feel so bad for him.
It's because, especially when they first introduced him, he was such a nice, naive character. He was the one demon that was actually good. But because of the scenario they were in, they sort of forced him, and they sort of dragged him kicking and screaming to be evil again.
Yeah, and, like, they got him out of this. They got him to stop doing the bad stuff, but he was, like, curled up in the fetal position, and Killian's just trying to fucking murder him. After, because she saw what he did when he was possessing the girl, and, you know, he basically fucking blinded her and crippled her, and she saw this, and she's like, oh, I'm gonna fucking kill this thing. Chloe's like, no, you're not, don't, leave him alone. And she said, but Spark, you have to do something for us, you have to help out, because she, you know, he cut off dude's hand. And what they showed was, I don't know if he, okay, so he, because he could fix people also through their possessing of bodies. And what they showed was the guy came out and he had like a hand that looked like he replaced the hand, but then the guy was talking like Spark. So I think he inhabited him. And he's maybe gonna try to fix him, but that guy was kind of a dick. Like, I mean, he was coerced into it, but he was kind of a dick. And Spark's like a good guy. So, was definitely not the last issue though.
Oh, okay. It did do the same thing that Ardops did, where it had end at the end of the issue.
Yeah, but Ardops had a very defined, like, here's your happy ending, you have it. This book ended with, okay, here's more mystery, and we haven't resolved it.
Let's see. I'm looking at this, because I'm trying to think, is the rest of this just prologue?
That would be epilogue, yeah, but epilogue. No, it's just continuing. This is a continuing series. Ardops apparently wasn't.
Maybe they're going to do that after the end of every arc. I don't know. That is weird they did that, though.
This was a defined end to this arc with hooks to lead into a next one. Like, the arc would have been her finding her brother, and then Chloe getting out of the clean room. And they resolved that. Like, it did have an ending. It just had stuff leading into the next story. So it was an end to that story.
Okay, I just wonder, is this the first arc that they've done, and is this the way Gail Simone's going to be writing the book with 12-issue arcs every single time, or is it just going to be whatever story she's telling and however many issues it goes, she's just going to have end at the end of every single arc?
I just wouldn't read too much into it. I honestly, if you hadn't mentioned to me, I wouldn't have even considered this as an end, but since you said it, I looked it up, and I saw issue 13, and I saw issue 14. They already have covers for them.
Yeah.
So.
In fact, I'm looking at issue 15 right now in front of me, so it goes on for quite a while. So.
Yeah, well, this is a good book, and it's been getting good write-ups. So, and, you know, Gail Simone has a little clout, so I imagine they're going to let her write it as long as they want. The artist is very good, too.
Yes.
So I think DC will just let them. They also, they need a lead book for Vertigo. They haven't had one since Fables ended.
And considering so many of their books are being canceled, they need something consistent.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is going to be it. Like, I mean, I don't... The people who read this like it, but I don't know how many people are actually reading it. It's definitely not a success on the level of Fables. So, you know, you might as well keep one of the books going. But we knew when they announced the relaunch of Vertigo, we got the list of like 20 titles. They said which ones were minis and which one were continuing series. Like, we always knew Sheriff of Babylon was going to be 12 issues.
Did we know Art Ops was 12 issues? I mean, I remember we knew a lot.
I bet we read it and we just forgot because there were so many books.
Exactly. So, I don't know. It's if I feel like with, especially with our next book with Young Animal, it's like, well, do you really need Vertigo? And I sort of feel like we're going over territory we went over last week.
This Shade book could have been in Vertigo, but like I said, this is showcasing newer writers.
Yes. So from Young Animal, we have Shade, The Changing Girl, issue 1, writer Cecily Castellucci, artist Marley Zaccone.
And you hadn't read it, but I discussed whether this is going to be a follow-up or just a complete relaunch of the last Shade, The Changing Man run. And it's both. It doesn't follow the original continuity, like the super villainish or superhero one. Mm-hmm. It follows the Peter Milligan Vertigo one, which is about a rock Shade who was an alien who came to Earth to combat the madness that was infecting Earth. And he had the M vest, which was the madness vest, which let him alter reality. Now, in this book, it's kind of clever, actually. There's a young girl who lives like in our world. Normal young girl. Well, she's actually a bitch, but you know, overall, a normal young girl who ends up in a coma, and she's gonna die. Her parents were gonna disconnect the feeding tube. And there's another girl who lives on Meta, who was obsessed with the old Shade, who was, he was a poet, and she is a poetry student, but she's obsessed with him. And they explained in the backup pages that at the time the original Shade novel happened, the planet of Meta had been getting, television waves sent from Earth, and there was a brief fad of everybody was obsessed with Earth from these like 1960s TV shows they were getting. Well, that fad is done, but she kept with it. So she decides she's going to be just like Shade. So she grabs the M vest, she steals the M vest, and she puts herself into the body of this comatose girl and is now trying to live her life. And there's no meta plot yet. It's just like, oh, the girl who's in a coma suddenly woke up and her old friends aren't really happy with that because she was shit to her old friends. but you know, it's got a lot of the weird shit, and it's a young bird alien girl inhabiting the body of this super bitchy Earth teenager. And we don't have like a big plot. I mean, the people on Meta know she's doing this, mm-hmm. and they're not cool with it. So they want to like get her back. They want to stop her. So I guess that would be the plot, is them trying to stop her, but she really has no goal.
No, she's just minding her own business, just tripping out of madness. But
I mean, she's doing this because like her idol did it, mm-hmm. but she doesn't have, you know, she's not combating the madness. Like, there's nothing she's doing. She's just kind of existing. And they're gonna come after her and try to stop her. But, you know, the artist, fits this book really well, cause he can draw the normal shit, but then he can draw the weird shit too, and he mixes it together in kind of a cool way. And it's kind of like a weird, trippy book. It does feel, I thought this was more normal than Doom Patrol, which I thought was actively trying.
I thought the opposite. I thought, and obviously some of the stuff flew over my head when I read Doom Patrol because I read it very quickly. But I thought this was more trippier of the two. Also, it had Grant Morrison done something like this, it probably would have irked me. But I don't know why, because of Cecil Castellucci, I was fine with it.
See, you should probably try to reread Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol was definitely a weirder book than this. It had a more out there shit going on. Yeah, this was weird, but it was more of a linear story.
I think
they told you everything that was happening.
I think that's why I maybe like this better than the usual Grant Morrison story. Because usually a Grant Morrison story, I feel like I'm grasping for straws, trying to figure out what's going on. Whereas this, I knew exactly what was going on, but it still had all the trippy stuff.
Oh, that reminds me, I want to reread Multiversity. Fucking love that.
Can I guess which issue?
No, I want to read it all.
Oh, from cover to cover?
I put over Pax Americana like it was the best thing ever, but I really liked the final issue too. I thought that was cool.
Did we ever get those original graphic novels? Or those not come out yet?
Oh yeah, they were gonna do a follow-up, weren't they?
Yeah, that series was supposed to continue, but it was supposed to be a graphic novel line.
No, that hasn't happened yet, but I don't remember when they announced it for. Morrison's still... Does he write anything for DC right now? I don't think he is.
He just writes that, and I think there's enough stuff with that. He did write a year one Wonder Woman story, but in a graphic novel form that we never got around to reading.
And it wouldn't have been continuity because it's changed now. Yeah, that was the last thing he wrote for them, but I don't think he's writing a monthly book right now for them.
He's probably writing stuff right now. It'll probably come out in a couple of months.
Or it got quietly dropped or something. I don't know.
They maybe could have got the receipts because I know they released sort of an anthology of all the Multiversity stories. They collected them into one giant book and maybe that didn't do too well.
Well, I like this. I thought this was a good start. And this young animal line hasn't, you know, for me at least, it's only had two books, but it hasn't let me down yet. So
no, it hasn't had one bad book. I sort of understand now kind of why they feel the need to do a separate imprint. If the books are going to be like this, I can see why now that maybe you'd want a Vertigo. Because Vertigo, they're telling stories, but they're sort of traditional stories, and they're not that trippy. They're, I guess you would say, normal Vertigo stories, and these are sort of off the beaten trail. So you'd want like maybe a separate imprint to do stuff like that.
Yeah, I could go with that.
I mean, at the same time, I feel like you're splitting
hairs. These books do feel younger. Like they feel like it's people trying different things. And, you know, there's only been one issue of each, so none of them can be bad yet, but they feel like they're doing something different for a purpose, not something different just to be different. Which, by the way, was a problem with the original Vertigo. Sometimes they just kind of throw shit out there and it'd be like, okay, this is weird, but I don't know why, and it's not great. My thing on that is, Morrison did this just fucking incredible Animal Man run. It's one of my favorite runs on a comic ever. And then Peter Milligan wrote it after him. And I always got the sense they told Peter Milligan, okay, Morrison's run was really weird, so make this really weird. And I read it for like five issues before dropping it because it was bad. Like, it just wasn't good. It was like, oh, here's a bunch of weird shit that doesn't make any sense and we're just gonna go with it. Because that's what you do, right? That's what this book is. And they carried that through with a lot of Vertigo books that never went anywhere.
So from Image Comics, we have Eclipse, Issue 2, writer Zachary Kaplan, art by Giovanni Tampano.
Okay, so, he rescued the mayor's daughter and he took her home. And then he went out with the cops because they have to go find the guy who can live in the sun. And he did talk to like a doctor friend's like, hey, how could, somebody live in the sun, or I saw somebody who who didn't get burned by the sun. And she's like, yeah, you're crazy. And he's like, no, how could that happen? And she's like, well, things adapt. And that's such, I think she was just writing him off because it's crazy and that can't happen, but that people don't adapt that quickly. Like that's not how that works. It takes, you know, thousands of years for people to develop these things. Like he didn't develop it in the last 10 years. And they did confirm that, like, this all happened 10 years ago. So, but they end up chasing him. They find the guy and they shoot him and he did bleed. And then he ran off into a church because they didn't see him run into the church, but they noticed that he had a priest collar on. Mm-hmm. So they followed him into the church. And then when they got in the church, the windows were all broken on purpose and there were all the churchgoers and they were all dead. Like they had apparently let themselves be burned alive. Cause they showed like there are people like praying.
That was awesome. Yeah. There's like,
yeah, it was a cool piece of art. It's creepy.
It's gruesome. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like you have this church full of partitioners and it was just like they were all dead because the sun came up and burned them all to death.
Yeah.
Quick question. Maybe this was explained in issue one. I think we talked about this off air. And if you explain it to me off air, then just by all means do on the show for other people that are listening. But is there a reason why they felt the need to explore the surface during the day?
Yes, there are two reasons. In this case, it's because they were chasing a killer. They went up to get her because, some of the people, they like to party during the day. Mm-hmm. And they had gone up to a club during the day. And, he had to go rescue her. And then, you know, they saw this guy. And they didn't want the trail to get too cold, so they couldn't, you know, wait 12 hours until it was dark. They had to go up and get him. In the first issue, when he was out, it was because, there was like the power lines or whatever are still on the surface. So he had to go up and fix it. When they go up in the day, there's always a reason. Like, so it was, we had to fix something that was broke during the day. And we need it to live because it had something to do with like their air purifiers or something we're going to shut down. Mm. So he had to go up in the day to fix it because that's when it broke. And the second time was they were chasing down a murderer. So they had to go as soon as possible.
Okay.
And also, they didn't say this, but I imagine another thing is since all the people go back to the surface at night, it might have been kind of hard to find this guy. When there's, I mean, I know he looks different, but he seems to do most of his activity during the day. So they wouldn't have been able to find him at all at night. And it's probably also, it's harder to move around when fucking everybody lives underground and they all go above ground at night.
I didn't get the impression that they all go to the surface during the night.
In the first issue, they showed
a couple of people, but it was mainly like young people that were looking to party.
No, it wasn't just a couple people because they were in Times Square and all the lights were on and it was full of people. Like there were people everywhere. It looked like, you know, what you'd see in New York City on TV. Like apparently everyone just comes out from the underground and they, you know, go to stores and go to clubs and bars and shit. And they just, cause they sleep. They said they sleep during the day now. And they go out at night.
Actually, that makes a lot more sense now that I think about it.
Yeah,
I just assumed everybody lived underground. So I'm just like, well, if they live underground, why did they feel the need to ever go back to the surface during the day?
Because it kind of sucks being underground all the time. It's all fake. They want to be in the, you know, the real world, and they do. And there was an interesting backup where it had like a letter from the government telling people the 10 cities that they basically said it was a letter to people who lived in Washington DC and Washington DC doesn't have, you know, a lot of underground shit. They don't have subways or anything, I guess. And it told them where to evacuate. And I don't remember if it was Philadelphia or what, but it gave the 10 cities that had been set up to be safe for people to go to. And it was, I don't remember all of them. It was, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Baltimore. There was one city on the West Coast, but largely the West Coast is fucked. And I think that's because you guys don't have subways out there, do you?
Not really. I think there was that one Tom Cruise movie where they had the subway system in LA and we sort of snickered at it, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think for you guys, it's because of earthquakes.
It's also the practicality. It's like nobody, you're talking about big sprawls of land and multiple directions, it wouldn't make sense really to have a subway.
I guess. I you know, the point of stuff, it cuts down on traffic. That's the theory.
Oh, then maybe we may want to look into investing in that.
And I know Jesus. You guys out there, you got the freeway or whatever, but I imagine traffic's a fucking bear and like LA is a big city. Mm-hmm. But if there's an earthquake, which starts underground and you have subway tunnels, which are underground, I imagine that's ridiculously dangerous and that's why they don't do it. I mean, in the Midwest, you know, Chicago has the subways, kind of. I won't get into it, but it's actually a bit of a different system. It's not like it is in New York.
Walking Dead 159, writer Robert Kirkman, art by Charlie Adler.
Oh, we had another character death in this issue. Lucille is dead.
Aw.
He fucking, Negan was fighting Beta, and Daryl throws the barbed wire bat to him, and he's fucking hitting him with it and talking shit and putting it over, so referred to it as his Excalibur.
That was
and then
awesome.
he cracks him over the back with it, and the fucking bat broke, and Negan actually yelled, "No!" And later on, after the fight was over, he's still sad about it. Daryl's like, "It's a fucking bat. You get another one. Get over it, pussy." The Whisperers carted Beto away, who was not dead, but was incredibly fucked up after the beating Negan gave him. And they're like, "Okay, well, we won." But then the zombies keep coming. And we kind of cut to the Whisperers, and they're like, "Oh, we're just going to keep attacking." Well, unfortunately, the Whisperers, let me say this. They cut to Carl and his girlfriend, who had assumed they're going to lose because she lived with the Whisperers and she saw them defeat groups before. And he's like, "Yeah, but no group you ever fought before had as many people as us, was as well organized as us, and was as well armed as us." And she's like, "Well, it doesn't matter. And by the way, I don't love you. You're too young for me. I never loved you." She basically said, "We could still fuck, but there's nothing more to this.
I'm not sorry and I don't love you."
Yeah. And she thinks he's saying it because, she's worried that they're all gonna die and she doesn't want to get close to him because it would hurt more when he dies.
Exactly.
But he's confident they're gonna win. And in this issue, what they did was, it was kind of clever. They teased that, they were gonna lose because, you know, we won, but now the zombies are still coming, but Rick's group is much more intelligent than the Whisperers. They came up with a plan where they split off half the herd because the Whisperers are like walking through and they're like, "Hey, wait a minute." And they look behind them and they're like, half the herd is gone.
Yeah, because they split in like, four different directions.
Yeah, and he's like, "Well, it's okay. Just keep moving forward." But they had a couple different things. They had one group to split the half the herd off. And then they had another group who would silently follow them, and they were staying really close and listening for the Whisperers to talk, and then when they did, they'd fucking kill them. So the Whisperers, who thought they had this great plan hiding in with the zombies, they end up getting shot. And then Daryl went up and he fucking took one of their zombie masks and he put it on himself. And he's like, "All right, let's do it." And they all put on the zombie mask, and they're apparently going to walk through with the zombie herd, you know, protected because they have the mask, but they're going to listen for people to talk. And then when they hear them talk, they're going to kill them because their thinking is, well, we can kill fucking zombies. It's these guys are the dangerous ones, though. So they're just going to go through and kill them all. The problem with this storyline, although it is cool because it makes it different from all the other Walking Dead storylines, is aside from the point when the Whisperers came into the town and killed all the people, Rick's group has always been one step ahead. They've always been shown to be more credible, more intelligent, better armed. Like, and everything's working out for them. Like, they were having the problems with the kingdom who wanted to split off from Rick. And they had a little fight in this issue where they actually sent people to Rick. And, you know, the leader's like, well, what the fuck are you doing? And the guy who sent him ends up going to him and he pulls a knife on him. And he's like, motherfucker, if... He's like, first of all, don't ever second guess me again. Second, if Rick's people don't succeed, they're coming here next and we ain't gonna win. So I'm doing the smart thing. And then, Negan's old group who, you know, after Daryl left, they didn't really have a leader and, you know, one guy stepped up and he's like, all right, we're not helping Rick's people anymore. We're going back the way things used to be. Well, they all said, fuck you, under the same reasoning of, they're gonna come for us after they get them, and they ended up sending people too. So on the one hand, everything's working out for them and everything's going well. And you might say like, oh, well, that's not very exciting. But the thing is, every fucking storyline in Walking Dead has been their group getting completely fucked over, their group being, you know, having terrible things happen to them and half the cast dies and then we have to move on. If this story is ever going to move forward, they have to win. And they have to keep winning because that's the forward movement in the story. If you just keep doing the thing where, oh, well, our safe area has been ruined now and we have to move on, it's the same story over and over and over again. The story they're telling is that they're rebuilding society. And to rebuild society, they have to defend from threats. If they can't do that, the story collapses and it goes back to what it originally was. I get the sense he's moving towards a conclusion.
Thank God.
To the series, because it's been going on so long now and he's had them, you know, he's had the brief periods where something bad happens. Well, bad stuff's always going to happen, but eventually their community is going to keep, or their three communities are going to keep getting bigger, and there's four actually. They're going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're going to keep getting better at dealing with the zombies. And then, you know, the story can wrap up. People have won. And that seems to be what he's building towards.
Okay. That's a lot to take from, because I know when Dave left, we kept reviewing Walking Dead, and I was like, I'm going to do my best to try to keep up with this. The fact that they're starting the Whisper War, it's like, I'll do my best to try to keep up with it. I'm like, wow, I didn't realize there are that many moving parts in this series.
Yeah, it's just the series, because if you remember when we first started doing the show and me and Dave would cover this, I always complained about how it's always the same thing.
Yeah, and now they're attempting to do something different.
Yeah, and they have been for about, you know, 30, 40 issues, and they've kept it up, and he hasn't slid back, and I'm happy about that. It's nice to read something different.
Very much so. All right, moving on to Marvel with All New Wolverine, Issue 13, writer Tom Taylor, art by Ig Guwa.
I love this book.
Again, this continues to be the Gabby book that also happens to have Laura.
She's good in it, though. She.
But I'm just saying.
She, and this was a bit of a darker story, or the start of one. They open up, and Laura's in the middle of a town, and everybody's dead. She's got the claws out.
Oh God! I'm now remembering the story. It's like, oh God, it's gonna be brutal.
So they skip back, and she's in the apartment, and she gets a box, and in the box is the trigger scent that turns her into kill mode, Laura. And she tells Gabby, "We gotta leave. We gotta go on vacation." And, you know, this is, I put it on my Facebook where she's like, well, what about the pelican? Cause she has this pelican statue thing.
Don't worry, I posted that with her. I posted that to our Twitter. People like that.
Yeah, so she, my cat, Lauren picked her up and she's eating my wife's hair. She's just brutally attacking it and grabbing it and biting it. It's very funny. I should have recorded this and put it on our page, but it's too late now. She put the cat down and the cat's pissed.
It's okay, Kaylee.
Eat her hair later.
Yeah, eat her hair later. Wait until she's sleeping.
you can eat her eyes.
So they decide they're going to leave. They grab Jonathan the Wolverine and they go to one of Wolverine's old hideouts. So they go to the old cabin and it smells really bad there and stuff. Well, she goes into town because the power gets shut off.
Yeah.
And she's going to check if the power is shut off everywhere. And when she gets into town, they inform her like, yeah, the power is all shut off everywhere and our phones aren't working either. Even our cell phones aren't working. And that's really unusual. So, just as they're saying that, planes fly over and they drop her trigger scent.
Oh my god. And you what's called the guy she was talking to, he had his son out there with him. He's like, just go inside. He's like, you could tell he realizes that from, Laura, he's like, stuff's gonna go down.
She tells him, get everyone out of the town now.
And he sort of just brushes it off and says, yeah, whatever. But as soon as the trigger scent starts coming down, he's all, son, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, well, because it was weird because it's like green gas. Like, it's not normal.
And we sort of established before and that they did in this issue where they show just how brutal she can be when she's on that gas. She killed her mentor who she absolutely loved. Like I guess she never grew up with a family, but that was her only family growing up. But when she's on that scent, she can't control what she does.
Well, she also killed her parents.
Oh, was that it too?
She killed her mom because she was a clone of Wolverine, but she had a mom who gave birth to her and she killed her. The only ones she didn't kill were, a cousin and an uncle or an aunt or something like that. She almost killed them, but they were able to live. She didn't kill them.
It wasn't from a lack of trying, yeah.
Yeah, so, but she did kill her own mother. So, you know, she told them to get out and then the issue ended. It was a very good issue. It had the good, and they've done it before. It had the good mix of the serious and you feel the weight of what's going on. But then it also had the humor, which is Gabby.
with the pelican and whatnot. That was in fact very funny.
Yeah, that was good. So it was a really good issue. It read very quick. It did have a lot of dialogue, but it read just quick. I thought it was a punchy little story.
Yeah, it's kind of setting up what looks to be a really grim story.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I will say this, with all the Gabby stuff, this book has been really lighthearted. And obviously it's going in a different direction as the Old Man Logan stuff, so it's different enough, but it's like, I felt like that's what this series needed, especially the way it started off, where they did all the stuff with the clones of the Wolverine, and then most of them died. I feel like they sort of need to, there's nothing wrong with the Gabby stuff. In fact, like I said, I was mentioning earlier, it's really fun stuff. But at the same time, you need to weigh it with all the more serious stuff with Laura.
You want to remember who the main character actually is. And I think Gabby had kind of taken the book over a bit because the character has obviously gotten kind of popular. So that makes sense. But you know, X-23 at one point was very popular too. This book is doing pretty good and it's not about Logan. So, I mean, people do have an affection for the character, but they do need to do something with her. You know, they brought her background about her handler and stuff and what a horrible human being she is. So
I think with as dark as material you're dealing with all the lore stuff, you sort of do need a Gabby there to sort of just remind you, hey, this story isn't all doom and gloom.
Yeah, it works that way.
Okay. Amazing Spider-Man, issue 19, writer Dan Slott, art by Giuseppe Camuncoil.
God, this is another book that I'd say we don't really need to read except for the fact they're starting the...
Well, here's the thing. We know Clones Conspiracies next week. After Clones Conspiracy wraps up, we can sort of weigh what we think of Spider-Man.
Well, they're probably going to do Doctor Doom stuff after that.
Doctor Doom?
Or Doctor Doom. Doctor Octopus.
Well, he may, be part of that Clone Conspiracy, but I feel like...
He's got to get his body.
Yeah, I feel like after the event, because it's going to be such a high-profile thing, I think after we sort of maybe start weighing the merit of this book.
The core point of this issue is Jameson doesn't just hate Spider-Man now, he also hates Peter Parker.
Correct.
Because Jameson's dad is dying in the hospital, and the new you people come in, and they're like, hey, we can grow him the new organs, and he'll be fine. And Peter's like, yeah, I believe the reason why this is happening is because it was like Peter's doctors, or he talked May into it. I'm not sure why he was able to make this call, but it was like, we can either do the traditional surgery or we can just make him the new organs and everything will be fine. Peter isn't willing to have them do the fake organ transplant thing because he said, while he knows it works, the one person he came into contact with who had these new organs wasn't doing anything, but he made his spider sense go off.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he wasn't willing to do it. Well, Jameson really fucking wants him to do it because he doesn't want his dad to die, but Peter says no, he goes off, he does some things, he comes back, and his dad has died.
Well, I feel like the deciding factor was that the dad decided to side with Peter. He thought, no, I just want to do the traditional stuff.
Yeah.
Because at first it paints this horrible portrait of Peter as someone who, you know, even though he has no proof to base this off of.
But Peter, as the genius, if he would have told the guy, like, hey, you should go with this new thing, I think he would have gone along with it. Mm. But, you know, Peter said, I think we can go with the regular surgery. So, I don't know.
I wonder with the idea if them doing clones and being able to bring people back to life, if they're going to sort of undo this. But at the same time, the family did see him die, so I don't know which way they're gonna go with that.
Well, the important thing was Jameson, when Peter finally came back, he fucking looked at Parker like, I'm gonna fucking murder you, you piece of shit.
Yeah, because all the while he's, all the stuff's going on with Jameson's father, he's still sort of trying to figure out what to do, but at the same time, he's still out web-slinging Spider-Man. And when he's trying to go there to be there for Jameson's father, he's dealing with all these other people that are having their problems. I think at the beginning of the book, there was the robbery, and I guess sort of in a hurry, he sort of webbed the wrong person, but he just said, you know, whatever, I have to go deal with all this stuff with Jameson's father. And then later on in the book, where there was this giant crane that was going to fall over and kill this guy who was in it, he's like, oh, God, he's like, I can't let this guy die, but at the same time, it's like, my father-in-law's dying. He's like, and I guess he had to choose to be Spider-Man because he was there, obviously, I guess you would say up in the air with the crane holding it until they could finally get a crane to rescue the guy. But it was too late by the time Peter came back to help make a decision that Jameson's father had passed on.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, since it's the story that's coming up, the Jackal and his Gwen Stacy clone was all over this issue too.
And then there was a little backup where the Jackal confronted Kingpin and offered to bring him back his wife. Do you remember this?
Oh yeah, he he brought Vanessa, like a clone of, and he tried to explain it's not a clone because they have all the, he's like, it's basically a reanimation, like they have all the memories of the original person. And he's like, hey, I can get you this if you do me a favor. And you know, Kingpin's wife is like talking to him, and Kingpin walks up to it and fucking snaps its neck. And then says, that's not my wife, that's a fucking monster, I'm going to kill you now. But he has hooked in the Rhino, Jackal has, and Rhino is able to stop Kingpin from killing him.
You brought this up earlier. You said they had made Rhino a good guy, and even we saw in this book he was kind of hesitant to kill, but the Jackal Surge just said, whatever, just kill him now for expediency and I'll bring him back to life. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, because Jackal, I imagine we'll get to it. We still don't really know what Jackal's deal is. It doesn't appear to be, it doesn't appear to be Miles Warren. It's like a different Jackal. He wears like a Jackal Egyptian mask.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose for this one.
It's very goofy, but I don't know, cause this was a serious story and it just feels like it's so fucking goofy.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, are they going to explain why, how he's able to resurrect these people and they have their memories?
And who he is? Like, it is a clone thing.
That I can sort of justify, but the idea that they have all their memories, it has to be something more than just clones.
I don't know.
Because, I mean, I feel
we'll
like...
find out. The series starts.
Feel absurd describing the science of cloning, but it's like, I have to imagine you could maybe made an exact duplicate, but they wouldn't have the same memories.
Well, yeah, because that's not how brains really... I mean, you can't... Yeah, let's not try to talk about
it. No, it's like you can't talk this subject without trying to make sense of the science of cloning, especially...
They're super clones. Who come out of pods.
Well, I feel like they're gonna explain that in the miniseries.
Probably. Hey.
Okay, I'm reading this off Comics List. They're calling it Now Champions Issue 1. Writer Mark Waid.
It's Marvel Now. Champions number 1.
I'm looking at Comic List and they have it Now Champions Issue 1. Writer Mark Waid. Art by Humberto Ramos.
Well, according to the cover, it's just Champions number 1 and Comic List is often wrong. So, we can't trust them.
Yeah.
I really, really like this. I thought this was a really good first issue of a team book. They had, it opened up with Kamala quitting the Avengers because, actually not because, okay, so what happened was Miles and Nova had already quit the team because they said they didn't join the Avengers so they could punch their friends. Because, you know, Civil War. Kamala, she was, you know, fighting supervillains with the Avengers, and they, like, destroyed a big part of the city, and they crushed a taco cart.
Oh, no.
And she's like, okay, so we're just going to go ahead and fix the train now. So that's back. And Sam Wilson's like, none of us are engineers, and Tony's not around. So we can't really do that. And she's like, well, what about the taco cart you crushed? Like, that's his livelihood. And he's like, yeah, that kind of sucks, but we can't do anything about it. And she gets so pissed off by this because her way of thinking is like, and the people were yelling like, hey, you fucked up our places of work, our houses, and now you're just leaving. Sam Wilson's thinking is, well, that's not our job. Our job is to stop the bad guys. Mm. And her thinking is, we're the fucking Avengers. We should be helping people. We just fucked up their lives. We should be fixing it, and you guys don't give a shit. So she quit, walks off the team. She then calls Miles and Nova together and thinks they should form a new team that'll actually help people, she said. And they hook in Amadeus Cho, the totally awesome Hulk. They go to help him, like he's rescuing some miners who got trapped in a mine and they successfully do this. So we make a good team. And then Cho's like, hey, I know who else we can get that'll help out. And they go and they knock on Vision's door. And Vision in his suit answers the door and he's like, oh, hello.
So can we see Viv?
Can we see Viv? And he's like, oh, sure. Let me go get her. And they're like, is he mad about us quitting the team or anything? And Vision apparently does not give a shit.
Well, he's also the Vision. He doesn't get upset.
Yeah, he's like, well, they want to see my daughter. So he brings Viv up, and Viv, they explain, is she knows Amadeus because they play a video game together.
I was like, please tell me he's not going to forget about that part because that was amazing.
And he's like, she even said, she's like, oh, I'm playing it now. As she's talking to them, which is to put over, she's able to, you know, she's basically a mobile Wi-Fi connection and a multi-processor, very advanced computer who can help them to, you know, track down problem areas and know the best way to fix things and stay in contact with each other. She's basically Oracle who can fight is how they're setting this up. So they hook her in and she's with them and they go on this mission and they save the people and they do a great job. It was actually a fairly bad one. There was a clown looking guy who was kidnapping young girls and selling them for sex.
Yeah, sex slavery.
Yeah, it was sex slavery was their first mission. So they stop him and Cho almost kills the guy when he realizes what he's doing. But, and of course.
Well, it wasn't that what he was doing to sort of cover his tracks. He threw the container into the ocean.
Well, yeah, but Cho saved it and he brought it up and then the guy took a hostage and they, you know, they got, like, I think Miles webbed up his hand or something. They got it away, but then Cho was going to fucking kill him. And Kamala, you know, wrapped him up and stopped him.
One of the girls dies, that's why.
Yeah, and she made a speech because this is the first issue of a team book and you have to make a speech. But this time the speech was caught on, someone filmed it on their camera, their phone, and they probably put it up on YouTube. And she used the phrase, champions in it. So they're calling them the champions. And it was trending all over social media.
Yes, the hashtag champions was trending.
They showed lots of other superheroes who, primarily young superheroes, who her message resonated with them. And she basically said, you know, she was bringing up the superheroes now, like they're always fighting each other and we're killing people now. And that's not what heroes are. We need to get back to the way things used to be. Need to have heroes who will actually help people instead of just fighting each other. And it was honestly, it was a really good speech because it had truth to it in what's going on in the Marvel universe. Like the superheroes are kind of fuck ups. They really don't help people. They just stop villains. And they currently are just beating the shit out of each other. From her perspective, for no real reason.
Yeah.
And there was an interesting bit when she's like, yeah, we're going to show Captain Marvel. And Nova's like, you mean show the Avengers? Yeah, we're going to show the Avengers.
That was very cute.
Yeah, that was funny. It said that Wade is better writing the young characters.
Very
Although
much so.
we did like the last like 3-4 issues of Avengers. It has been good, but he really has a strength with these young characters. And he showed that a lot here. Even the characters he hasn't necessarily done a lot with, like Cho and Viv, he handled them very well. So I think this is going to be a strong book.
It's presented to be and it's sort of angled to be, so I'm looking forward to that. I just find humor in the fact that a 50-year-old man really knows how to write teenagers really well. Because we've seen
he's,
that.
He's good on Archie.
Yeah, I was about to say, he's really good on Archie as well, but it's funny to think a 50-year-old man is. His expertise is writing young kids.
Well, my favorite Wade thing, well, no, cause he wrote Kingdom Come and that was fantastic and that was about all the older heroes. And his, I really liked his Flash run, but his Flash run is about Wally and he was, you know, the younger Flash. So, I don't remember if he wrote Impulse or not. I can't recall. And his Fantastic Four was good too. So I mean, he's a good writer all around. But yeah, he has a thing with writing these kids. He just does it better than everybody else.
Okay, moving on to Death of X, and I can't seem to find any creative as far as writing or artist is concerned. I'll see if I can.
It was Charles Soule and was it Lemire
for artist?
No, for writer.
Let's see. I'm looking at comic list right now, and we sort of. Piggyback what you were saying earlier, how they get stuff wrong. It just gives me TBD. No, it has writer. It has two writers. It has Jeff Lemire and Charles Soule as the writers on this, and it has the. I'm looking at this from Marvel.com. The penciler is Aaron N. Kuder. K U D E R.
I don't know how to say his name.
I'm gonna say Kuder.
Although I will say I thought his art was a little staged.
Yeah.
A lot, like the art wasn't bad. There were moments where it was very effective, but there were times when they're showing characters and it looked like he was drawing mannequins, which I didn't like. And given how much hype this book had, I don't know why he chose to do that, because it wasn't in every panel. Yeah, it almost looked like he was rushed.
Had this been book, and obviously no pun intended, book X, and it was sort of like, I guess, a mid-tier book, I'd be fine with the art, but it's supposed to be this big, it's supposed to be this big book that leads to a crossover, and it's, you got so-so art in it.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, the art wasn't, it didn't detract from the story. I did not overly like this, but I liked some of the things it did. They were, this opened up 8 months ago, and the X-Men got a distress call from Mirror Island, and they head there, and there's, this cloud over everything, and it's the Terrigen Mist. The problem with this was, this was apparently after Crystal and the Inhumans had all been going across the world, you know, saving the Inhumans. Mm-hmm. So they should have known what it was, but whatever. They're on the island, they all get exposed to the Terrigen Mist. They go through, they're trying to find out what happens, and they find, you know, everybody's dead. Everybody on Mirror Island is dead. No one is alive. They find like some weak life signs, but that's it. They eventually, and this is the most brutal part of the book, actually, that they go through, like, behind the lab, and they find basically a mass grave of multiple men. they're all dead. They're all, you know, bubbled up, and they look terrible because of what the Terrigen Mist does to the mutants. And, you know, a couple of them are coughing, including Cyclops, so it's affected them. Jamie, the multiple man, the original one, he's still sort of alive because, you know, that's convenient. And he tells him, it's the Terrigen Mist, that's what did this, look at our research, blah, 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 blah. Cyclops decides that, the Inhumans did this, and they never thought about what it would do to our people, and therefore we are now at war with the Inhumans. Because they did this with no thought to anything. Now, the interesting part of the story is they're juxtaposing the horrible shit that's happening to the X-Men with the great shit that's happening to the Inhumans. Like, the Inhumans were in China, and the city the Terrigen Cloud was about to hit, they were all outside, and they were waiting for the cloud to come because they pointed out that the people now, they've done all this work to make the people trust them. And the people are excited when the Terrigen Cloud comes because they might be an Inhuman and they might get superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
So they all go outside to wait for it. And the Inhumans are having nothing but good things. The governments of the world like them. They trust them. Everybody's happy with them. But they still fucking hate the mutants. And it's the mutants who are being negatively affected by this. So Cyclops kind of has reason to be angry. But to say I'm going to war with the Inhumans for something Black Bolt did.
To be fair, it is absurd. It is over-exaggerating. But then again, isn't that well within the Cyclops character parameters?
Yeah, he's an idiot. I mean, like I said, Cyclops comes off... His reaction is understandable, but knowing what we know about how all this happened, he comes off as the bad guy. And by the end of this, we know from what everyone has said, he will be the bad guy, but we also know he will have died anyway because he's infected by the Terrigen Cloud. Now, Beast explained they don't exactly know why it doesn't affect all the mutants. This was done because, obviously, you know, magic is there, and gold balls was there. Yeah, they brought fucking gold balls of all people, and even he buried himself in this story.
Like, I sort of feel like unqualified for this.
Yeah.
For this mission.
Yeah, but they brought him. So, but, you know, gold balls is obviously alive and well in the Spider-Man book, and magic is alive and well in the Extraordinary X-Men book. So the Terrigen Cloud, while it kills a lot of mutants, it doesn't kill all of them. It doesn't affect all of them. So that's why all of these mutants didn't die. Although I just thought of something, Emma, have we seen her?
No. In fact, that's one of the things I brought up. Ever since they did everything post Secret Wars, they've done absolutely nothing with Emma. And there was a line in this book that I found odd because she called Cyclops darling. Is that just
well,
the way
they're dating?
No, they'd broken up earlier.
Oh, did they? Well, she talks that way because she's a uppity bitch.
That's what I was going to ask. It's like, did she just talk like that, or did they forget that Cyclops and Emma broke up?
Yeah, she might, but I thought maybe they were still dating because I didn't really follow it. But either way, maybe she dies too. And that's why we haven't heard from her. But I mean, this is the first issue. And like I said, I did not love this, but I do want to see what Cyclops did. That's why you're reading this, to find out what Cyclops did. Like, we know he died. And he would have, like I said, he would have died anyway because he's coughing up blood and shit. So he was obviously affected by the Terrigen Mist. But the draw of this book is to see what he did. And that's, you know, that's why you're reading it. And that's it. So there's not a lot else to say in this book. Like I said, the only clever part is showing what the mutants are dealing with at the same time what the Inhumans are dealing with and how the Inhumans have it so much better.
Yeah, there was that nice little parallel at the very end of the book where they showed Cyclops talking to a mutant who was dying while at the same time Crystal's talking to a new human, and they both end the book with both saying they look out for their own.
Oh yeah, they look out for their own. So, and, you know, obviously meaning completely different things. So that was clever. And there is something to this, but overall as the first issue, it wasn't the strongest thing it could have been.
No, it was not.
And killing Cyclops I'm fine with because he's a horrifically bad character and he's always sucked and he always will suck. Killing multiple men is, that bugs me a little, especially to do it in the way they did it, which I felt like they only did so they could have a shocking page of art, which it was, but they did the last like 10 years, they've done a lot with that character to make people give a shit about him. And you know, his run where he was a detective was a great fucking comic. I can't remember what it was called though, but it was a really good comic and I'm kind of sad that they killed him, but you know, whatever people, It's an event, so you have to kill characters in events, so that's what you do.
Exactly, get the thing over. Although, with the idea that eventually you're gonna end with Cyclops and Emma dying, it's like, isn't killing Cyclops enough of a thing? Do you necessarily have to throw in unnecessary deaths?
Actually, no, I can defend killing multiple characters because if this thing is such a huge threat, for Cyclops to take it seriously, you have to kill people, and you have to kill people who are names. Otherwise, it has no emotional impact, and nobody takes it seriously.
You can kill Gold Balls.
They could have killed Gold Balls, but again, nobody would care.
In fact, we'd probably throw a parade, so. But then again,
I don't hate the character, I just think he's stupid.
Well, in that case, all the more reason to kill him.
By the way, he was fatter in this than in the book where him being fat is a part of his character.
Exactly. Well, it's really inconsistent. Sometimes they show him and he's kind of a heavy guy, but he's not, well, you wouldn't say fat, but at the same time, in this book, they showed him clearly as a fat man.
Yeah. Well, he is wearing spandex in this though, and he wears t-shirts and jeans in the other book we read him in. So maybe that's why.
Doctor Strange, issue 12, writer Jason Aaron, art by Chris Bocklow.
Doctor Strange versus Baron Mordrow.
With the added twist, Doctor Strange has no magic.
Well, no, he has magic, but he doesn't have anywhere near as much as he used to.
Okay.
Like he's carrying around a lot of magical items, like yeah, you know, a magical sword, magical chewing gum, which I thought was cool. And he can do spells, but it weakens him a lot. He doesn't have his get out of jail free card.
Oh, okay.
He was chasing down the pain monster that he kept in his basement.
That was
who escaped from him, by the way.
Well, yeah, that's where they ended the last arc with Doctor Strange at the monster. Well, actually, I thought the monster was eating that one guy who was trying to kill off magic.
It did, but then it escaped. Oh, it left. And he was chasing it down, so he chased it down in this. He ended up catching him, fighting him. He couldn't really beat him. He was trying to tell him he'd help him. But this thing was created from pain, so I don't think it's going to work that well. The bigger issue is Mordro's back, and he's working for... Who's he working for?
The Dread Dormammu.
He is working for Dread Dormammu. And Mordro, since he got his magic, most of it from the Dark Dimension, still has all of his powers. And, you know, the Doctor Strange librarian pointed out to him, like, hey, are you really that worried about this guy? Like, I've been looking it up, beat him every time you saw him.
Yeah,
and he's like...
He's all, I did that with magic. So, and even,
yeah,
the,
like,
and even
I
then,
I have a lot more power.
He's all, and even then when I had my powers, he's like, I just barely beat him those instances.
Yeah, he's still a dangerous dude, so now he's gonna fucking cream me. And, yeah, that's the story.
Yeah, so, and there was this good part that I really did like where Doctor Strange brought up, he's like, everybody in the magic community was sort of affected by that guy. It's like, magic is sort of on the ropes here. And he's like, I'm curious, it's like, how is Baron Mordo still have magic, all things considered?
Well, Scarlet Witch is unaffected in her book.
Yes. Since we brought it up, let's talk her book. Scarlet Witch, issue 11, writer James Robinson, art by Kizama.
Okay, so Robinson is back to the story now. It was still good, so he I don't know, I gotta figure this guy out, man. Like, why is he so much better on this book than he's been in so long?
Well, I told you, I think the strength of this book is, even though, especially in this issue, it sort of follows up with the overarching story he's been telling as of late, it still sort of reads like he's doing single issue still.
I guess. Maybe he writes this in a different style, and that's why it's good. I can accept that.
To me, that's easy to do. It's hard to screw that kind of formula up, but when you're trying to tell this giant overarching story, I can see how you could fall into pitfalls of, you know, just you're thinking of the giant arc, and maybe it's not necessarily a good story. Where if you have a single story, if it's not really that good, that's fine because the next one will probably be better. But with that said, all of these stories have been good, so I'm sort of there with you. I'm like, well, you know, he could tell the individual stories issue when we go into later on when we talk his Squadron Supreme. I'm just like, it's like, I can't believe this is the same guy.
I actually like this month's Squadron Supreme, so I'm gonna cut him some slack in general this month. I thought he had a good month. But, so, in this issue, she's going off to find out about her mom. And she meets with, a priest who is, she realizes he sold out. Okay, so the High Evolutionary was looking for kids to turn into monster people.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave up that there was there were two twins in the town. And the Knights of Wundagore, the High Evolutionaries, monster people, lion men, had been attacking the town. So he gave up where the twins were, which meant he would no longer attack the town. So he was saving the town, gave them up. Wando was very upset with this priest who kept saying, you know, he only did what he thought was right, and I only told them where you were. Cause she's like, yeah, so you handed me over to the Eye Evolutionary. He's like, no, I just told him where you were. Which, it's like, you fucking
You're splitting hairs there.
Yeah. So, she finds out that she had a aunt. Was it an aunt?
I believe so. Yes.
Raised them? Yeah, but first she goes to this old lady who remembers all this shit. She's the one who told her she had an aunt, because she's like, okay, well, that's my mom, and her mom, you know, was Scarlet Witch. She fought magic and stuff. She eventually, she died trying to rescue them from the High Evolutionary. And she did. She was able to get them out and, like, spirited them away to this aunt, I guess. But, the mom dies. She found out the mom died. She's like, well, what about my dad? Do you remember who she is married to? She goes, you know, I don't, but this lady might. And it was her aunt. So at the end of the issue, she goes to see the aunt. And it ended before she, you know, said, like, she introduced herself, but the lady hadn't talked yet. And then the issue ended. So you read the next issue to see what she has to say.
Yeah, it was a good issue. Again,
yeah, it was.
We got more of Scarlet Witch's background.
We need, because it's been completely
redone. Who was it that the High Evolutionary had pity for? Because I think it was a member of the family, and it's like they went through all that.
It was the mom.
It was the mom. There we go.
Yeah, because the mom went to fight and he killed her. But she fought with such tenacity, with such strength to get to her children, that he ended up giving the children to the mom's sister.
Yeah.
Like he found the next blood relative and gave the kids to them out of respect for the mother. Even though he killed the mother. But, you know, he did something kind of good.
Even he has his limits.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Still a horrible person. But.
Since we're talking all things James Robinson, let's talk Squadron Supreme, issue 12, art by Leonard Kirk.
Well, they destroyed the time machine.
Yes.
So Warrior Woman cannot, well, she's going to, but she hasn't yet found a way to get back to Narmer, who she has to get. Because, you know, Ulysses. That was our Civil War tie.
There's your Civil War tie-in, everybody. Now shut up.
Yeah, like he needs Ulysses. Or she needs Ulysses. Or she needs Narmer according to Ulysses. So, Hyperion and Dr. Spectrum are still ghosties, which they think is their... Because they got fucked with the time travel. They think they are like, how did he explain it? They're in between times. They haven't yet arrived at where they're supposed to be going, so they're like ghosts. They did get to witness, this is actually really funny. Zarda, or Thundra, and Blur are, you know, they've been arrested because, Warrior Woman killed a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent because the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent showed up. Well, the other Warrior Woman, the one who doesn't have powers anymore, who she thought she killed, she looks exactly like her because they're the same person. She actually doesn't look exactly like her. She's wearing different clothes. She has shorter hair, but face-wise, they look the same. So, you know, we can give that away. And she was there and she came in with the team. So that's fair enough. Warrior Woman killed a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and they saw her, so they assumed the good Warrior Woman, Power Princess.
Sorry, I'm thinking of a funny instance in the book. I don't want to get ahead of myself here.
That's okay. They assumed that they had all killed the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and Jim Hammond, original Human Torch, comes in. And Blur is like, he's like, sir, before, and you know, keep in mind, he's tied up. Like, they're going to arrest him for killing a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and all the various things described in Supreme's time. And he's like, sir, I just want to say before we go any further that it's an honor to meet you. And he's basically like, son, are you a fucking retard? He's like, you've murdered a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. You killed Narmer, who is one of the oldest heroes in the world and one of my good friends. He's like, you've been flying all around the world, destroying things, wreaking havoc. And you think I give a shit if it's an honor to meet? How is it an honor to meet me when you're behaving in this fashion? Which is good. He just completely talked down to him. Yeah, but, so Warrior Woman and, her magician sidekick friend have run off to go find another way to get to the past and hook up with Namor.
My favorite part was, since we're talking Namor, they're talking about something, I forget what the context was, and then it's like, Spider-Man brings up, oh, let's ask Namor, oh wait, we can't, he's dead, you killed him.
Which, I wouldn't think he cracked jokes about that.
Well, the way he cracked the joke was like, oh, let's ask him, oh wait, we can't, you killed him, he's dead, bang of job. Like, he was browbeating him, so it wasn't a complete joke. It wasn't, ha-ha, Namor's dead. It was, you monsters, you killed Namor.
Yeah, that was funny.
before we move on to Valiant, we have our final Image Marvel book with Jessica Jones, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Michael Gatos.
What are you waiting for?
Oh, you need me to do a recap?
Are you waiting for me to bury it? I'm not gonna, people.
I liked it. It was good.
Here's the thing. I kept repeating. I liked Alias. This was Alias. This was the same artist.
You've made it clear when it comes to your Bendis hatred, you hate it when he's on teams. So the idea of him doing a solo book on Jessica Jones, a series that you did like the Alias series, so I don't know if the people that are expecting you to rail this book are going to be satisfied, because
I don't think they pay attention. Somebody on the board had mentioned, like, oh, you know, I don't hate this version of the character. I like this version of the character. I enjoyed most of the TV show. I have a problem with Jessica Jones being in the Avengers. That's my issue. I have a problem with her being Luke Cage's bitchy, naggy wife. I don't like that. But her as the detective, I have no issue with. And this book opened up with her getting out of jail, actually. And then a woman wants to hire her because her husband thinks he's married to another woman and doesn't remember the last 8 years. And Jessica assumes this woman is crazy or the husband's just cheating on her, but the woman brought up, like, hey, you're a superhero, that's why I came to you. And, you know, I've been reading about these alternate dimensions.
Well, it wasn't so much that he forgot things. He said he was a completely different person. He said he used to have a wife, that she was younger and that she had blonde hair, and he's like, I have no idea who you are.
Yeah. So she thinks her husband has been sent to an alternate dimension and replaced with this guy. Jessica doesn't really believe this, but she needs the money. So she's going to look into it. At the same time, Misty Knight shows up and tries to beat the shit out of her and asks her where the kid is. They haven't explained this yet. This is the hook of the series. Apparently, Jessica has kidnapped her daughter, which, you know, you can do. If you have two parents and one parent takes the kid, it is kidnapping. But she has apparently taken the daughter for an unknown reason, and Luke is hiring his friends, his superhero friends, to bring her back.
Yeah,
We have the case, and we have the mystery of why did you kidnap your own daughter?
Yeah, I did point to you and I think a few other people. It's like, why is Jessica Drew here drawn like Kristen Ritter, like Jessica Jones from the TV series? And you sort of explained to me, and someone on Twitter explained to me, that's how she's always drawn her.
Yeah, it's a different artist, and this is supposed to be, you know, this is not a superhero book. Mm-hmm. This is more of like a street level book. So, you know, she's not wearing her tight spandex outfit. you know, they're not trying to sell sex here.
Yeah. But I just thought it was odd. It's like, why is TV Jessica Jones talking to comic book Jessica Jones?
Yeah, they're trying to present her as a human being instead of a comic book character, which is fine.
Cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a good start, and it did have a good hook for our next issue. I am pleased with this. And I do want to point out, it's not that I love all Bendis solo work, because obviously I was not a fan of either Iron Man book and stopped reading them. So it's not like I think he's good on every solo character. It's just, if he's gonna be good, it's gonna be on a solo character.
Exactly. All right, and to wrap up this week's books from Valiant Comics, we have Bloodshot Reborn, issue 18, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Miko Suwan.
They were stuck on the raft after Bloodshot Island got blown up. We didn't get anything with Manhattan being infected with the nanites, but we got background on the various Bloodshots and their histories. Like, the one they're calling Tank was World War II. He was the first Bloodshot. He doesn't have the nanites. He had, like, other shit done to him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was telling a story about, because the one they call Vietnam, the black one, and I'm calling him the black one because it's actually relevant to the story they tell. He was like, God, shut the fuck. He's like, you don't even know, man. He's been telling these goddamn war stories forever. He's like, they didn't even make any sense. How the fuck did he open a grenade underwater and throw it into a ship?
The story, like, the story was him in World War II when he was fighting against a bunch of Nazis at the time. And they were on a boat, and their boats were being capsized by all these Nazi submarines. And as they were, as the ship he was going was about to go under, he decides to grab a bell of grenades, and he jumps into the ocean, and he rips open one of the U-boats, and he throws a bunch of grenades inside, and he manages to sink it. But then the you mentioned the Vietnam guy is like, well, you've been telling stories all this time, and I'm starting to think they're not true, because explain to me how a grenade can stay active underwater.
Yeah, so, but he did end up pointing out that he was a badass because they needed to eat, so Tank ends up fucking jumping into the water and killing a shark.
So maybe there is some truth behind his stories, because, you know, I was sort of skeptical there. It's like, yeah, you're right. That doesn't make sense. Maybe he is full of it, because the idea of him being a Bloodshot going back to World War II seems kind of preposterous. But when they were starving, they're like, oh, we need protein to survive and also to feed our nanites. Just without even giving it a second thought, he jumps in the ocean. He pulls out this shark.
Yeah. And Cold War, the Russian one, he was a Russian spy who they gave like a bunch of robot parts to.
Yes.
So he doesn't have nanites either because they didn't have it yet. But since he had so many robot parts, the United States captured him and they reprogrammed him into their Bloodshot. Vietnam.
Well, I thought he had found the serum for the Bloodshot program because he was a spy. He took it with him to Soviet Russia.
Well, there was no serum.
Oh, okay.
He was looking for information on various things, and then they got some of it, and they tried to make him into their version, but he was much more robotic. So they, you know, he said the American government, when they got him, they reprogrammed him, because he's basically a robot. But then the programming was lost, and he said, now I'm, like, empty. Like, I don't have anything. He's like, I was super communist, and then I was pro-U.S., and now I don't have any programming in me, so I really got nothing. Vietnam was just a guy who was there during Vietnam, and they'd make him do things like, hey, there's snipers in the trees, and we need to see who they are. So go run over there and find out, because when we see them shoot at you, we'll see where they are. They'll reveal themselves, and we could shoot them. So his job was to get shot and blown up a lot because he wouldn't die and they treated him like shit. So he's got a lot of anger about that. And you know, Bloodshot just dealing with, you know, oh, I miss magic. She's everything in my life.
Who knows if I'll ever see her again.
I'm super sad she's gone. She's the only reason I have to live, and it was very sad. But
and it's at this point they decide, you know, if we could keep eating, but at the same time we can't live like this forever. So they come to the conclusion that they're all on this giant raft. So what they're going to do is they're going to take turns in teams of two, and they're going to paddle towards
paddle.
Yeah, that's why I say paddle.
Yeah, paddle.
They're going to paddle towards land. Now, here's my question. Considering the new series is being called Bloodshot USA, is this presumably the last issue of Bloodshot Reborn?
I think that's just the name of the storyline.
Oh, okay. I thought that'd be the title going forward.
No.
Okay. All right, that's going to do it for this week's books. Let's end with our final segment, next week's books. All right, let's crack open comiclist.com and let's see what we have for next week's comics.
I opened it earlier. Let me find it. Okay, as I'm looking down, Cinema Purgatorio, number 6. We read that book.
Very much so.
Briggsland, number 3.
Yay.
An indie book that actually comes out in a reasonable time period.
And is very, very good.
Yeah. Is Action Comics one of the books we're not reading anymore?
I did the cooking show thing where I sort of looked at the list. You want to put a question mark on that?
Yeah, put a question mark. We're going to put question marks on more titles from now on. I think that's how we'll handle this.
Yeah.
Detective Comics 942, we have to read because it's the last part of Monster Men. Doom Patrol number 2. Nice. Didn't that just come out?
Yep. Issue 2 is coming out.
Jesus. Okay.
I think it's one of those things to where it came out at the end of the month, and now it's the beginning of the month. So technically, it's still monthly, but it came out not too long ago.
Yeah. Flash number 8, because that storyline is still going on. Mm-hmm. Hal Jordan Green Lantern Corps.
I'm excited for the next book. Wonder Woman, an even numbered issue.
Oh, Back to the Past.
Yeah.
But you missed Sheriff Babylon. Number 11.
Shame on me.
What's wrong with you, dick?
Are you throwing bottles at kids for?
What?
Why are you throwing bottles at kids for? Yeah, on one of our breaks, I played him that clip of Nick Diaz talking to the kid who had the bottle thrown at his head, and Nick Diaz responds because he's interviewing the kid.
Well, he asked who threw it. Yeah. Conor McGregor. Why are you throwing bottles at kids? Hey, right? Dick. Okay. Oh, Eclipse is getting a second printing.
Nice.
Good so for it him. Must have done pretty good. Jupiter's Legacy. Number 4. Killer Bee Killed, number 3.
Ooh, it'll be snack week.
Lazarus, number 25. Do we want to read the new Mark Miller series?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Reborn, number 1. Let's give it a shot. Okay. Clone Conspiracy, number 1.
I will be reviewing, since it's the final issue, of Darth Vader.
Okay. Great Lakes Avengers, number 1.
Yeah!
Very excited. Howard the Duck, number 11, last issue. Didn't even make it to 12, that's sad. Moon Knight, number 7.
It's a shameful thing.
Old Man Logan, number 12.
Just completely overlooking Mosaic, not even gonna bother?
Not gonna bother.
Okay.
Punisher, number 6. And Solo, number 1.
I was going to ask, are we reading Solo?
Yep. Thunderbolts number 6. Uncanny Avengers 15. Mm-hmm. And Britannia number 2, Wrath of the Eternal Warrior number 12.
Yeah, that's all I got on my list. So this
this
comes out to a grand total of, including the question mark next to Action Comics, 25.
Let's see if we read them all.
The only one that really we may not read is Action Comics. Yeah, we shall see. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HaveGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.